bike as a as an analogy, I'm going to use the books as an ago when Amazon started the book business. Now everybody know that we get everything pretty much. I even get groceries from Amazon. And I remember back in the days when Amazon first came about, the publishers, a lot of businesses were very scary because they thought that would be the end of publishing business. The interesting thing is that, well, yeah, a lot of the books have moved into electronic, but there's still a huge volume of the printed books being sold. And that's probably because what you mentioned about some of the smaller players, they can pivot so quickly and probably have more freedom to do so compared to the bigger companies out there. And I think ultimately from what you mentioned about relationship, connecting with the clients, using the proper fintech in the practice, ultimately we are adapting to the consumer's behavior, right? The consumer will change their behavior, how they want to acquire certain type of services. I remember last year, the year before that, I did a talk regarding about, so what's the future of the advising business, with knowing that robo-advisor is being in the practice and being adopted into working with clients. So how do we do that? I think ultimately the key words that you mentioned there is really trying to have a different way of connecting with clients, as well as watching what the consumer's behaviors actually unfold, because the technology enables us to do so many different things. Without the technology, I don't think we'll any business could survive in the pandemic. But we all did it. All of us have gone through the challenging year of meeting clients through virtually, but yet somewhat creative. And I don't know if this is a trend that you're seeing. I believe last year in 2020, those firms who adapt very quickly, seeing a tremendous amount of growth in their revenue. That's the one that I'm seeing, and I hope that you're seeing the same thing there. All right, so let's go to the next page, please. So what are the most five common business drivers that actually helped drive the business model?
So as you look at what the drivers are of why an advisor selects a particular business model, you know, whether many different issues that come to play, I found that it really falls into five major categories. I also think, and we'll talk more about this later in today's session, I also think it's helpful to think about these different categories as a continuum, where you look at on the far left of the continuum, the traditional employee model, on the far right of that continuum, the RIA model, and progressively taking on more risk and more potential financial gain as you move through that continuum. But the five different drivers, which you can see here on the screen, are our first risk and responsibility. And we can talk, Dr. Chin, you can tell me what you want us to do now or later. We can expand on each of these, but risk and responsibility and the impact that has on the business. You know, freedom and control. And well, you see financial implications listed as number three. And when you think about financial implications and, you know, that impact on an advisor's decision to either select a business model or often it's moving from one business model to another, you know, while financial implications certainly, you know, have impact, what we found over time is that freedom and control is really what ultimately impacts satisfaction. And it is what drives the satisfaction, particularly in the independent business models. Four is growth and growth opportunities. And as with the others, this is different depending upon which model that you might be in. So if you look, for example, on the growth area, and if you're in an employee type of model, you have opportunities to earn referrals from the firm, for example, from investment banking, or if an advisor leaves and They distribute those relationships to other people so you can inherit accounts if somebody leaves or retires. If you look at more independent models, independent contractor or independent RIA, the opportunity to market yourself and your firm is often more flexible. And so the ability to utilize social media, the ability to be out there doing advertising, maybe radio shows, other things that you just might not be able to do if you're an employee, because they're frankly worried more about advertising their firm than advertising your individual practice. And then also one of the things that has certainly occurred and even accelerated in recent years is inorganic growth. So either recruiting advisors to your firm or acquiring independent financial advisor practices for advisors who are retiring. So that opportunity is greater in those more independent business models than it is in the employee business models. And then the last element is succession. And succession, there's more flexibility, again, as you move across that continuum. So when you look at succession as an employee, that's largely driven by the firm. So these firms will have what they often refer to as sunset type of programs that allow an advisor to bring in a junior advisor to ultimately take over the business. And it's a structured process where the firm actually dictates the financial aspects of how that program works. As you are exiting, all of the income you receive from the sale of your business is taxed as ordinary income. So it's just, regular W-2 income over time. When you look at the more independent businesses, you're actually selling the goodwill of that business. And so because you're selling a capital asset, that it's driven by the market in terms of the buyer and seller and the value, that they agree upon. But then secondly, because you're selling an asset, it's typically going to be taxed as long-term capital gains versus ordinary income.
There is obviously a lot that packed into what you just say. Why don't we go ahead and go to the next page, because I'm afraid to ask any questions that might potentially prolong the discussion. We probably should have a day to talk about this. So let's talk about, in terms of continuum business model, walk us through what does it actually mean?
Yeah, so when you think about those different drivers that I referenced earlier, and this continuum that I had referenced, right at the beginning of my remarks on the last question, I think visually it's helpful to think about these risk factors from the perspective of this continuum. And so if you look, for example, at, the level of risk. So level of risk typically would fall into two categories, the category of compliance and regulatory risk and business risk. And so if you look at the compliance and regulatory risk, and this, as you look at these two elements, is important to recognize that while they do progress from left to right over the course of that continuum, they don't progress in the same way. And so risk is a great example of that, because on the regulatory and compliance standpoint, traditional employee, independent employee, and independent contractor, because they're all affiliated with a broker-dealer, that risk level is the same in all three of those, doesn't change. When you look, however, at independent RIA on the far right-hand side, that compliance and regulatory risk is the responsibility of the advisor or the RIA. If you look at hybrid, it really is partially the firm and partially the advisor. So hybrid, as you know, is where you have a combination of a brokerage relationship and then also an RIA. And so with that relationship, you're responsible for the regulatory and compliance risk for your RIA, and the firm is responsible for the regulatory and compliance risk of all of the brokerage business, with the one caveat that the firm is also responsible for supervising outside business activities. And one of those business activities in this case, of course, is the RIA. So it's hybrid from that perspective in terms of the supervision there and risk there. If you look at business risk, as you progressively move from traditional employee to independent employee, for example, you've taken on more business risk, because in that particular model, you are responsible for your staffing expenses and also your rent. And so as business goes up and down, that provides some leverage. And so this business risk continues to progress higher as you move on out. So independent contractor, more risk still, hybrid a bit more, and independent RIA more still. And so two different examples, one that moves linearly across the continuum, and the one that kind of stair steps, if you will, the same, jumps up and then jumps up again for that last factor. When you look at freedom and control, somewhat similar to what we described in terms of regulatory and compliance, the financial aspect tends to move also sort of from a step standpoint, but a little bit more linear. So it's almost a balance between the stair step and the linear. And by that, I mean, when you look at the financial progress, it tends to take some bigger steps as you go along the way. But one of the things I think that's also important when you think about the financial implications, you know, as a business owner, you know, you're taking business risk, but the financial benefit that you gain from greater levels of independence partially is the fact that you're taking on new roles. So when you're an employee, you know, your role is just one, serving as financial advisor. As a business owner, you have the responsibility for running the business and managing the business. And so you're getting paid not just as an advisor, but you're getting paid to run the business, and you're getting paid for the risk of owning the business. So it's important to recognize that there is some time and responsibility that goes hand in hand with that additional compensation. The biggest benefit, however, from a financial perspective is leverage. As your business grows, often what occurs is your expenses aren't growing as rapidly as your revenue. And so that's what often attracts more seasoned financial advisors to these more independent business models, particularly those that are actively growing their business, because they look on out and they say, gosh, if my business doubles over the next 5 years, but if I manage expenses and those expenses go up by, let's say, half the rate of revenues, then there's real leverage in terms of margins. And then the other financial implication is valuation. And I found this really remarkable as I've watched how this has transpired in the current environment, when there have been, you know, more and more firms out there acquiring smaller advisory practices, that these valuations have increased markedly over the last several years, providing opportunities for financial advisors, frankly, that they didn't think they would have. And then I'll comment briefly on the last two, growth. Growth is different depending upon the options. I referenced this briefly in my response to the last question, but there certainly are some opportunities to grow that are different in the independent arenas. And then succession, we also talked about in that last question as well. You know, it's been interesting to watch, as I said, in terms of acquisition, what the opportunities are out there. But I'll also tie, you know, my last remark here, succession to mentoring, because I would encourage any of you out there that are currently in practice and have your own advisory firms, really be thoughtful about the next generation and the next generation team, and mentoring, you know, the members of your team so that they have opportunities long-term similar to those that you have. Because I just think it's a really critical issue for our industry. One of the things that, and this is why programs like what Dr. Chin is running, you know, at Catherine Lutheran University are so important, because we really don't have enough people coming into the industry. And so having more people providing mentoring, if you're in there, of next generation advisors is really important for us collectively to be able to meet the needs of individual clients and help them through all these important financial decisions over the course of their lives.
And I think that I'm totally on the same page with you. And here I've seen many of our students come through our program specifically trying to figure out how that risk and rewards formula works. ultimately everyone, for those who is willing to take the risk, they're obviously looking for that upside. That upside of the rewards oftentimes is better in terms of what you mentioned about leveraging the independent side. And what this comes down to is not necessarily that who should do what. I think that one could argue that, you know, you may or may not have the talent, but I would argue that it really comes down to one person's or few, that your capacity and capability, right? You have to have both capability and capacity. And oftentimes the biggest issue that I've heard in terms of the shortage talent in the industry is that many of the firms that you and I work with has a capacity issue. They have more clients than they could even handle. And so going into that independent route or independent RIA route really still also forcing the owners to look at not only taking the advantage of that scalability platform that you built, but at the same time that enable to create that valuation that you're looking for when you exit. If you don't have that talent pools as a continuum, you would potentially face some challenge going down the road, because there are just a lot of shortage this year. Just we are only in May, the beginning of the May, adjusted program, we received 7 to 8 different senior advisors roles at opening, and it's really, really hard to fill. It's not that there's not enough people to apply. Finding the right fit, when I say right fit, is not necessarily the skill, also the fit in the culture. It is a, and so if the business not addressing that talent pools, part of this business model continuums, that the talent pools of the fresh blood coming through your business put a really big pressure for the growth model, if you will. So thank you so much for giving us that clear picture of it. Ivana, question, please. And so I guess ultimately, for those people who are willing to take the risk, looking for that upside growth and upside valuation of the company, what do you think that advisors should do in order to get to that point?
Yeah, great, great question. You know, as you're looking at your practice and then really being thoughtful about the value of your practice, proactively thinking about it is really key. And so I think there's a number of different issues that are drivers of future value. And I was reminded of this with the work that I'm doing presently, you know, with consulting, and we invest in independent wealth firms. And I was thinking about a firm that we looked at here recently versus a firm that we looked at a couple of years ago. And the assets of the two firms were about the same, about $600 million or so in assets, but one of the firms sold for a valuation of $25 million, and the other firm actually hasn't sold yet, but it looks like it'll sell for a valuation of around $10 million. Both of the valuations, frankly, quite high, and probably much higher than what many of us would have thought a firm of that size might sell for, you know, if we look back, you know, even 4 or 5 years ago. But what are the differences that drive the valuation of one relative to the valuation of the other? And I would say, you know, that it starts with a plan. You know, the old Yogi Berra quote, if you don't know where you're going, you know, you might just end up somewhere else, I think is also true. And being thoughtful, and as we've heard, you know, how important it is to work on our business, not just in our business, is really key. And so being thoughtful about where your business is headed is really where it has to start. Second item is, you know, you can't improve what you don't measure. And so we've all heard about the importance of, you know, these KPIs, key performance initiatives, and measuring those is really important. But being thoughtful about what they are, I think is important, because, you know, these have become so broadly used. And, you know, in my experience, in some cases, you know, the KPIs end up being such a long list that it's just another tool, as opposed to something that really is focusing attention, and that's what you really want, is focus attention on those key things that are really important. So if I go back to my early days as an advisor, for example, you know, I used to track asset flows from very early in my career. And so I would look at all new, either larger deposits or new relationships, as well as any larger withdrawals, and track that every month with a monthly goal and an annual goal. And that process of tracking is really, really important. The next element is a team. You know, as I phrase it, you know, life and your business are better with a great team. You know, it's all about the people around you and just recognizing that, you know, there are fortunately, if we look at administrative roles, for example, there are people who are administratively talented and would do a way better job than I would ever do in that sort of role. They also enjoy that sort of role in a different way than, frankly, I would. And so recognizing that as you're building your firm, surrounding yourself with great people that are as passionate about their roles as you are about yours, you know, is really going to make your ability to attain higher levels of success, you know, that much easier. And then the last element is that, you know, if you create a business that really is an awesome business to own, it's going to be a business that is going to end up with a higher valuation when coming time to sell. That business that I referenced that sold for $25 million, I actually heard on Sunday, I've stayed in touch with the CEO of that firm, even though we ended up not buying it. And he sent me a text regarding, I guess he was sparked by Warren Buffett's remarks this weekend with their annual meeting. And I had recommended to him the book Snowball on Buffett, you know, when he and I were chatting a couple of years ago. And so in any case, really being thoughtful about valuations, being thoughtful about how you run the firm. And as I think about the way he ran the firm, he was really thinking about making the firm bigger than him and empowering his team and organic growth and all the things that made his life so much better as he was running the firm. And the wonderful part about it is not only did he, as a result of that, enjoy a much more interesting life and enjoy the career more than he otherwise would have, you know, it paid the added dividend that when it came time to sell, you know, the valuation of the firm was at a premium because of all those things that he did that just made it the right type of business to run during his time as a financial advisor.
Yeah, so those are phenomenal examples, you know, $25 million versus $10 million, even though the asset under management is the same amount. You're right. The having the right type of leaders in the firm, doing the right thing at the right time, as well as willing to use the team approach to empower the organic growth. And without a plan, it's really, really hard to accomplish for that. Let's go to the next page in terms of, we've gone through a lot of, I have a few pages of notes in here. We've gone through a lot of things here, but if you could give us one advice, you know, out of everything that we talked about, if you could give one advice for those people who are entering or already in the business, thinking about moving to a different type of business model, what would that be?
Yeah, so it's interesting. When we talked about this at the beginning, I was thinking about the career advice. So I'll do both. I'll do both, you know, advice in terms of business models and then just some broader thoughts. And in terms of the business models, I think the important thing to remember here is life cycle. And then it's all about you and these pros and cons that we discussed over the course of today's program, I think are so important, and really being thoughtful about what the circumstances you're in today, what some of the, if you think about the trade-offs of these various drivers, just think about each one of those individually and be thoughtful about that so that you can come to the right conclusion for you. And just recognizing that it's the right conclusion for you. It's not that there's a right business model. It's the right business model for you. And then the broader comment or advice is, actually, I'm going to mention three things. The first is the impact of relationships. One of the things I think is so interesting about our career is it creates opportunities to just have experiences that we might not otherwise have. And so one of the things Dr. Chin referenced, I have spoken at, is the Tiburon CEO summits. As an offshoot of those summits, they do this adventure trip once a year. That's what brings me actually to Palm Springs. So this adventure trip is actually a little crazy. It's roughly this one for this year, it's about 50 people doing this kind of crazy long one-day hike. So in Palm Springs yesterday, this was a makeup, Cactus to Clouds, which is 22 miles long, 10,000 feet, took us 14 hours. So it was quite a day. I'm a little tired today. But the people that we do it with is just such an interesting group. And so these are all people in the industry, one of whom happened to be Skip Schweiss, who, as many of you know, is the current board president of the Financial Planning Association. And so, you know, having interesting people like that you interact with just enhances your life. So I'd just be thoughtful about relationships and things that you decide to do. We talked earlier about mentors. Mentors can be hugely impactful. And the last thing I'd leave with you is one of the things in my experience that separates the most successful from others is lifelong learning. And so when you think about the CFP, in fact, Skip and I were talking about this yesterday in the trail. You do these things and often it comes back to business, but I was asking them about some of their plans and we talked about continuing education. And I referenced to him that, you know, I felt that while I had learned so much getting my CFP, that I learned even more after that with being thoughtful about the continuing ed and doing continuing ed that would really be impactful for the type of business that I wanted to do with my clients. So that lifelong learning process, I think, is one of those key attributes that separate the most successful advisors from others. So I've enjoyed being with you today. I hope you've found a nugget or two that is helpful, but I just want to congratulate you on choosing what I think is a fantastic career and wish you much success in the future.
Well, thank you so much, Bill, for such an informative session. I walk away, at least from my perspective, that I walk away with more than a few nuggets. And I think that these are things that both of us have experienced, and both of us encourage people who are in the industry or coming through the industry that ultimately that relationship bit that you mentioned, that experience. I used to belong to a group called the Women Presidents Organization. We had the same thing, that we go out with the adventure trip. And those are the time that you oftentimes foster those relationships, either with someone who is in the industry or not in the industries. That's where the ideas are exchanged. That's where you build your lifelong relationship. That's where you actually have the sparks to continue that learning, because things always change and that learning can only come from many different sources. And so thank you so much for an informative session. Ivana, if we can go to the next page, please. And I wanted to especially thank Bill, as well as California Lutheran University School of Management Financial Planning Program for sponsoring today's Next Gen Mentoring Forum. If we could go to the next page, please. California Lutheran University School of Management, we offer MBA in financial planning that helps financial advisor pursue a leadership position or grow their financial planning practice by deploying advanced financial planning, effective communication, financial counseling, streamlined practice management, as well as leveraging fintech. Please sign up for our info session for more information. Our next Gen Mentoring Forum session is on May 18th at 1 p.m. Please join me to interview Dr. Shine Lay, who is a CFA and CFP. She is going to talk to us about how to attract women as clients into your practice. And thank you all for attending today. We will look forward to seeing you in our Next Gen Mentoring Forum. Thank you, Bill.
Thank you.